Hello, I'm Preston Schlankover. Welcome to Civil Defense Radio, where we discuss all things civil defense. Civil defense is about building community resiliency by becoming better informed, prepared, and organized to meet whatever disaster might affect you, your neighborhood, and your community. In fact, civil defense helps reduce panic in a disaster. This is just one reason why we promote it. So, one of the reasons for this program is to help inform you, because we can't rely on true and accurate media coverage of the issues that could be a threat to you, your family, and our nation. We have to get more. We have to dig deeper. So I often quip to my friends, if the media doesn't report it, did it really happen? There are many issues we need deeper knowledge and understanding about to make intelligent decisions about our safety and survival in the new world we see coming. Our guest this week knows very well what he is talking about because he lived through a total financial collapse in his home country of Argentina in 2001. Fernando Aguirre is an author, a YouTuber, and a regular guest on many shows where he provides his insight into the events and troubles that are affecting America and other nations around the globe. Fernando was our guest on episode 48, Surviving a Financial Collapse. It is a great pleasure to have him back with us today. Fernando, welcome back to Civil Defense Radio.
Preston, it's a pleasure to be here with you.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to talk to you and watch your YouTube videos. And as I mentioned in the first time you were on, I'm a big fan of your book, Modern Survival Manual, Surviving the Economic Collapse. That was a very eye-opening book that you did and a lot of information, and I highly recommend it. I know you've got a couple other books, and so can you just introduce yourself, what you've gone through, some of the things that you've done, and you can highlight your books if you want to.
Sure, absolutely. Well, my name is Fernando Aguirre. I'm an author and a YouTuber, and I've been into survival and preparedness for over a decade now. I started writing after experiencing the economic crisis, which ended up in an economic collapse in Argentina, realizing that lots of the things that we see in terms of survival and preparedness don't always relate in such a practical way for the kind of thing I was seeing over there. So I got more interested in urban survival, although it's more about, well, what I ended up using as a definition as modern survivalism, because it doesn't really affect so much if you are in an urban, suburban, or rural setting. It's pretty much the same thing. But basically looking at a more practical, hands-on approach to all of this, when your country goes down because of economic reasons, like I saw many times influenced strongly by political reasons as well, which is something that you guys are definitely experiencing right now. So, yeah, I wrote my first book, The Modern Survival Manual, Surviving the Economic Collapse, which I'm glad you liked. My second book was based on my experience leaving Argentina when I just decided it just wasn't viable anymore for us. It's called Bugging Out and Relocating. So I ended up moving to Northern Ireland, which may seem like an unusual choice for some, but it was a great place for us. For several years, we lived there, and it's a place I'd go back to again. And finally, my last book is called Street Survival Skills, which is more of a practical, hands-on manual on many of the techniques that I explained in the first book and a lot more, lots of things that I learned since then. But focusing on that, on the practical approach to all of this.
I have to admit that I haven't ordered your other two books yet, but rest assured, I will. They will be part of my library, and I will be talking about them on a regular basis. So your video that you did, and I'll put the link at the bottom of the show notes. You were talking about the three stages of America's collapse, and when I listened to that, it was so right on, so spot on to what is going on here. What we're seeing, these things are not new to the world stage, are they?
No, not at all. And, you know, I have a little bit of something that I have experienced over the years is My audience for my books, my YouTube content and everything I write, my content is mostly, my audience is mostly 90% American. That's just the way it is. It's mostly an American audience. Now, one of the bad things that I have being a foreigner to all of this is many times I get this attitude of, oh, this happens to you because you're over there in South America, or this happens. There's this thing about, and it's very typical. I've lived in different places already, and it's very typical for people to think what happened elsewhere will not happen to us because, you know, we are, I don't know, we'll just handle it better probably. So over the years, I've always gotten this thing, oh, yeah, that's never going to be happening here. That's impossible. We're never going to be seeing what you saw over there or what people saw in other countries. And yet it's been going on for a very long time. If you look at, I mean, I guess all Americans will agree that the education system, especially the upper education system, university, even high schools, it is very much indoctrinated into a left-wing agenda. I don't know many people that would argue against that. It's pretty visible, at least the way I see it. And what folks don't realize that that's not accidental. That is the typical first stage, what I described in the video you just mentioned, which is the stage in which you indoctrinate the future generations. It doesn't take all that long. Just 10 years later, you will have young adults that will believe lots of these things that they were taught in school and in universities. So when you see these black dressed people tearing down monuments, or the pink haired lady screaming at the top of her lungs like a lunatic, and you don't understand where all of this is coming from, this is a result of a process. It started, I talk about this with Matt Bracken quite a bit, and it's been going on for it's been going on for a very long time, and it is classic. It's classic from the left to do this. In Argentina, it was even in the 60s, 70s. In other parts of the world, it happens at different stages. But that is definitely the stage of indoctrination, of creating an environment in which a revolution or an uprising will fester, will hold. You need that fertile ground for this to go on. Now, the first stage is already over. I see it very clearly in the second stage, where it's creating this idea that America is horrible, America is the worst place in the world, no one is more racist than Americans, and it has to be all brought down and destroyed because it is the most awful thing that humanity ever saw. So you have to start over again from, you know, the rubbles of the previous horrible evil empire. That is the way I see it, and I think it's quite clear as well.
Yeah, I agree. Just to be clear, in episode 66, I did a sit rep. I highlighted an analysis from the unconstrainedanalytics.org that they did, and it describes these people as neo-Marxists, and their strategy is insurgency in America, which is part of what you were talking about, the indoctrination, infiltration of stage one. And so these neo-Marxists, they are great deceivers and frauds, aren't they? They say that they champion the rights of poor, minorities, and underprivileged, yet they are the biggest violators of human rights in the modern world ever since the creation of communism.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, again, none of this is accidental. Take, for example, this supposedly all of this started because of George Floyd, right? A man that was, of course, caught in video, and you saw these pretty tough images. Now, anyone with an ounce of common sense and objective perspective, horrible things happen every single day. Little kids get shot even during this period of time. No one mentioned any of that. So bad things happen all the time. In fact, if you want to look at this from a white cop shooting a poor, underprivileged racial man, there was an incident in which it wasn't really all that long ago. There was an incident in which a cop accidentally shot through a window and ended up killing a homeowner who happened to be a black lady. It was a pure accident. It was a case had timing for everything. And at the end of the day, a cop without intent just turned around, saw through the window a lady with a gun, which was a homeowner that called that person, that cop, and it was a horrible tragedy. Now, no one burned a single city over that. And there was a very clear-cut case of, you know, someone that was not intended to be. The point is, this is happening right now because it is designed to go like this. You have the perfect opportunity given by the pandemic. It's the same thing as what they did in Canada. When Trudeau banned guns, he ended up banning like semi-automatic rifles. It's a huge mess, and you know how bad it is. Guns are not being banned in Canada right now just of pure coincidence. It's being done right now because of the pandemic. The pandemic allows you to do things that you previously weren't allowed to do, such as banning guns without having people protesting on the streets and demonstrating against these bans. Now, the same thing goes down now. They're asking for you to defund the police, bring down the system. This is all terrible. It has to be all brought down. At the same time, some people are allowed to voice their opinion. Like in the case of New York, the mayor of New York says you're not allowed to go out on the streets and protest unless you're protesting in favor of Black Lives Matter, because Black Lives Matter is more important than a pandemic. So they have a right to voice their opinion. If you think anything else, no, you don't have that right. You just have to stay home because we have a pandemic. So it is very unfair. It is very much well organized. And unfortunately, you have a lot of the Democratic Party, let's be completely honest, is in this along. They are very much in favor of this. They're seeing it as a great opportunity to regain power in a very undemocratic way, but it is what it is. That's why you're seeing the Democratic mayors, governors letting cities burn, because the idea is the worse it gets, the better it is for us. The worse it looks, the more anarchic and desperate it looks, the better chance we have of getting back in power. And the big difference is getting back in power through undemocratic means, not through democratic means. This is not right. What you do when you allow your city to burn so as to regain power, that is not the right way to do it. You're not being upfront. You're not honestly winning an election. You are using some of the oldest tricks in the book so as to do these things and achieve power.
Yes, I agree. These people, they're, if you listen to what they say, you can understand their motivation. They look at their actions as well, because these guys, they're not thinking about us. They're thinking about winning an election, and that election is all encompassing for them, because if they gain power, then they will have power for the rest of eternity, because there will not be another free election in this country after their win. If they win a majority of the, if they win control of Congress and the White House, forget it. If they win control of the Congress, but not the White House, then the White House will be under siege for another 4 years. And this is all classic Marxist, Maoist attacks. Matter of fact, I believe that China is helping out with a lot of this. They've provided street organizers and funding. And matter of fact, somebody was speculating not too long ago the reason why the Chinese consulate in Houston was burning so much. They were burning the ballots that they already had printed up to sway the election.
Could be. I wouldn't be surprised. One of the important things for people to understand is this is not the classic democratic process by which it's sometimes you lose, sometimes you win. You win some elections, you lose some. Sometimes you have a democratic president, sometimes you have a Republican. These guys are far left. These guys are Chavez-like, Venezuela-like. Once they get into power, they will not respect anything. They will not respect any laws, any cultural, you know, standards of decency that you may have. They will just go all in for this. And that means doing absolutely everything to make sure they never lose an election again. They will, I mean, they already have. Unfortunately, this is something that in my one of the last videos I did with Matt Bracken, someone was saying, oh, you're sounding so much doom and gloom. Anyone that knows me for any period of time knows that I'm not the kind of person that goes, oh, the sky is falling, that's the end of the world is coming. No, but I've seen this in my own country, in other countries. I know how it works out. Look at Venezuela. It's been 20 years since they had an actual election. But in theory, they do have elections. In theory, you will vote, but it doesn't make any difference. They always win. If they don't win, and there's even a point in which people do believe this. I mean, they have a control of a huge percentage of the population, and they do it through handouts. They do it through threats. They make sure you lose your job if you even express a different opinion. How will your country look 1 year from now, knowing what you know already, knowing that if you express the wrong opinion on Twitter or Facebook or whatever, you get fired from your job right now. And no one thinks that's wrong. People think, oh, yes, but he's for sure a racist because he said all lives matter. And it's amazing because you see these peaceful protesters, and it's like 80% of them are white. And there's a black guy saying, hey, don't burn down my neighborhood, man. What are you doing? And, oh, yeah, we're doing this for you. and the black person says, you're burning down my community. You're burning down my town because of me. Don't use me as an excuse for what you're doing. This is something you see it time and again in different YouTube clips. The message is, if you're against us, you're horrible and you have to be destroyed.
Yeah, so your three stages, we've talked about the first stage, indoctrination and infiltration. The second stage is revolution agitation, which I think we've kind of touched on a little bit of what's going on in the streets and the Twitterverse and YouTube and Google and Facebook. And, you know, that's all, they're all playing on the same team, and it's to destroy our country as founded and the freedoms that we enjoy as Americans.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's important to understand where this is coming from. And this, again, this is straight out of the Communist Manifesto. The Communist Manifesto is a little booklet with their basic principles, but it's worth checking out because you understand better what they're doing. So in the Communist Manifesto, it says that so as to reveal capitalism, which is a horrible system that oppresses minorities and the poor workers, capitalism just looks good. You just thought you had a great quality of life. You just thought you enjoyed freedom in America. You just thought that your life was good. But it was all a disguise. You have to tear it down, make it as horrible as possible, make it as horrible to live in as you can possibly make it. Destroy the institutions. Destroy that middle class. The Communist Manifesto says clearly you have to destroy the middle class, because it's just a system of oppression. What you have left when you destroy the middle class is just poverty and misery all around.
Right.
They know it. They know it perfectly well. But in their own system, this is the way in which they justify themselves. And if you listen to some of these left-wing college professors, they justify violence in a similar manner. They say that their violence is, in fact, self-defense. It wasn't all that long ago. There was I think that Tucker Carlson was interviewing an Antifa college professor, and he was saying just this, that his attack on you is self-defense because you represent a system that is oppressing him. So he's attacking you because you're just middle-class white. He will just assume that. Doesn't matter if you are actually, you know, someone that is living paycheck to paycheck and struggling in life like any other person, or if you're rich, doesn't matter. He just assumes that you're something that needs to be have the mask removed so as to show how oppressive the system is. That way, they justify what they're doing right now in the streets.
Yeah, well, I don't believe in reverse racism. I think it's just racism that that they're promoting, and that's what it is. It's a racist ideology, and it's being used as a weapon against anybody who goes against them, even blacks. There are black conservatives who are vilified all the time. So is it really about being black, or is it about being a leftist? The answer is it's more about being a leftist. You have to be on the communist plantation in order to be accepted and to have any validity to your point of view.
Trump, I mean, it's awful that we have to mention the skin color of a person, but a black Trump supporter got shot, got killed just a few days ago.
Yeah.
No one cared because he was a Trump supporter. So it's really not about how black or white someone is it? It's about if you're a Trump supporter or not. So if you're a black Trump supporter, you're one of the bad black ones that needs to be, and that's okay if you get shot. It is horrible. It is, as you were saying, it's this idea of they are the most racist people on the planet. They use this as means so as to achieve power, and they're doing that very effectively. But if a black Trump supporter gets killed, if a little seven-year-old black girl gets shot in the street, in all of this mess, gets caught by the defunded police, it doesn't matter. That's all worth their that's all casualties in the war they're fighting against the evil capitalist empire in their own minds.
Yeah, and no amount of death is too little for them. There's been spokespeople that have been on tape that have said, you know, we'll kill all those that defy us. That's generalized, but that's basically what they've been saying.
They really don't care. They will use absolutely. That's one of the disadvantages good, law-abiding, hardworking people have. You just don't think this way. You just think about doing the right thing. You'd never think about using children as shields, as hostages, abusing poor communities and burning down those poor communities for your own benefit. You never think that way. These people do. These people will not bat an eye in holding a Black Lives Matter sign at the same time they burn down a store in a mostly black community. They're burning down the store where 90% of the people that have to buy from that place happen to be minority as well. They don't care about any of that. They just use their a Collins sign as a shield to justify their actions.
Yeah. Okay, so the third phase of the strategy to engineer America's collapse, you said, was the final domination. And can you elaborate on that?
Of course. Once you convince people that things are out of control, the president has no control over anything, he's handling the coronavirus horribly, he's doing everything wrong, he's not sympathetic with the struggles of the enslaved minorities who are living in a horrible misery. And once you convince a critical mass of voters of that, you end up winning the elections. Now, the idea is not have a democratic process by which they stay in power. No, they're not thinking that way. They're thinking Venezuela-like. Once they have power, they'll never let go of absolutely everything they have. Many of these things keep working on one on top of the other. For example, it's not that the first part where they indoctrinated schools just goes away. That just gets even stronger. That gets even worse. Once they have a control over the government, they already have lots of control in terms of governors, in terms of education. But all of this gets maximized. You will not find a job working for the government if you're not aligned with their ideology. No one in the government with a job will be anything but from their far-left ideology. It just will not be possible. Exactly like Venezuela. Look at – I insist. Look on Venezuela. There's not a plural opinion. There's not a diversity of thought of any kind. You're just a red shirt, literally wearing a red shirt and marching with the supreme leader, and that's basically it. if they win this election, you're looking at something similar in an American version. It's not going to be maybe as ridiculous as Maduro wearing a red shirt. It will be close to that, unfortunately. But in essence, it's the same thing. Once they achieve power, they never let go of it through peaceful means.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's where things really get ugly, because they're projecting things right now. They're saying that if Trump loses, then he's not going to cede power. We're going to have to drag him from the White House,
right,
and all this stuff. What they're doing is they're projecting their feelings and their actions. They've been doing that for the last, well, since 2015, and they're good at projecting their biases and failures upon other people, because of course they're the bright and enlightened ones. You know, they never make mistakes. But I do believe whoever wins that this country will devolve into a possible second civil war. I know that if they win, it will definitely a lot of strife. I know they are planning a lot of strife if they lose. So either way, it's going to happen.
Yeah, what they're doing when they're saying that that even if Trump loses, Trump will not give back, will not leave. They're preparing the field for what they have in mind in case they lose the election by a small margin. They will try to say that Trump actually lost, so he's not accepting that he lost. So even if he wins by a small margin, they will make it look as if no, he actually lost. He's just messing with the election, and he just doesn't want to give up power. So we have to remove him through violent means, because he actually lost and he's not accepting that. That's what they're saying when they say that Trump will not accept the results of the election. Now, of course, if you have these people that are downright, you know, communist Marxists, let's suppose that Trump wins by a pretty decent margin. Let's make our best case scenario. That is the scenario in which you are right now. Trump is already president.
Right.
So they will continue doing what you're seeing right now. They will continue agitating, and they'll continue focusing on stage two until they bring it down. They will make him leave through violence.
Well, that'll be very hard to do because at that point, there'll be patriots standing up and making sure that that certain things are put back into place, because there's hundreds of millions of us right now that are waiting for a go sign. And I'll tell you, these foreign collaborators and traitors, they will be dealt with one way or another, I'm sure. I just hope that the Trump administration is able to take these people on and get things done, because I foresee very ugly times, and that's why it's important to have a group of people that you can stand with during times of trouble, and that's why civil defense is so important. Fernando, we're out of time, but I thank you very, very much for accepting my invitation, and I know there's a time difference between us, but thanks again. Civil defense equals resiliency equals survival. The top-down governmental approach to solve our community resiliency problem has failed us. We need a community-based grassroots approach to solve this problem. To be resilient, it takes preparation, organization, and training to meet the needs of whatever situation we may find ourselves in. Civil defense helps reduce panic in a disaster, and this is why we strongly recommend establishing a community-based civil defense organization in your city or county in partnership with your local emergency manager and community leaders. Let's start a conversation with the guide found on our resources page at civildefenseradio.com. Be sure to check out our Facebook page, where we're catching up with the older episodes, and our Facebook and Twitter at Civil Defense Radio for Facebook and Civil_Def, DEF_Radio or Twitter. I wish to thank Fernando again for being on the show, and thank you, our friends, who listen to us on a regular basis. I really appreciate you being with us this week. So please, be safe, be informed, be prepared, and may God bless you and keep you until next time.